Welcome to the Round 3 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. What a crap start to the year.
It's not been super for the both of us, and our community in general, I'm guessing, have a few picks that haven't panned out quite as well to start the season, but still excited to be here, excited for season 2016, excited to finally get into trades. Last week, we didn't do a show. Apologies to everyone who was looking out for that, because we don't recommend trading after one round in general. And so, you know, this week, keen to get my hands finally dirty and make some of these correction trades, mate. You know, we've got 30 trades to turn things around, 21 more rounds to go. We'll be sweet.
How many trades can we use this week?
Two. Wish we could use more, but
just use them all, set up it up for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
At least the Bombers won on the weekend, mate. That was awesome to be at. Very exciting to get it, win unexpectedly, and during the march to the game as well, it was everyone was sort of there together and getting behind the players, and had my little boy there, so that was pretty fun.
And yeah, Geelong got off to a good start as well. So for our footy teams, it's been not too bad. For our Supercoach teams, Mark, we have released our team reveal online at supercoachcoach.com.au instead of our podcast last week. So if you haven't checked that out already and you want to see our team in more detail, you can head over there. We'll reference it as we go through the show, obviously, but we're not actually going to do a team reveal in this particular show. We are going to mention what scores we did get, though. So last round, Mark, you scored 22.53 and I scored 22.41. So you pipped me by a dozen points. And this week,
yeah,
you got the candy again, mate. I scored 20.18. And what did you finish on?
20.56. So pretty crap, really. A lot of really crap scores. But pretty excited that there's a little silver lining that I did get ahead of you 2 weeks in a row, mate. Just bringing down the team over there.
By like 50 points. Let's not get too carried away, mate.
A win's a win, buddy. Did you see Richmond after Friday night thinking that they'd won? No.
You just wait and see, mate. It's a marathon, not a sprint with Supercoach. As you well know, having pipped me in the past late in the season, so I've got plenty of time to make up the points. I'm, to be honest, a bit glad that I'm not further behind, considering that at the last minute, chickened out and went back to green from Hall. So, ouch.
Pretty sure I remember you messaging me just before that game saying, Green or Hall, and I'm like, you have to pick Hall, he's an absolute must-have.
It wasn't quite that strong, all right? Let's not oversell it. Sure. You're setting me up with Green there. I can feel it. Luckily, you turned it around with a 120 over the weekend, averaging 85.5 now, so not end of the world. And, you know, this is why you don't trade after round one, Mark, because if I traded after round one, it would have been Hall.
Rage traded out.
Yeah, definitely. So he showed a lot. You know, even in the first game, even though he didn't score very well, he attended, I think, tied for the most center bounces attended at about 14. So good that he kept the faith. Anyway, we'll get on to this week's show. The rundown, as we have done for the last few weeks, as we do throughout the season, we've taken them from Facebook at facebook.com/supercoachcoach and on Twitter. Our handle is @supercoachcoach. Thank you so much for your questions. We got massive amount of questions this week.
We really did. Plenty of decisions to make. And I think one of the easier things was maybe a lot of our community have some of the same issues.
Yeah. Most of the questions about, you know, Rockliffe, Barlow, JJ, Papley, there's a few common players in there, and then we've chucked in a few of the maybe slightly more fringe decisions, like Degoe, Mark, you have him, we've got Rich, both of us have him. So we'll move through in a logical order. We'll cover trade outs and then trade ins, because there's no much point looking specifically at a trade out and trade in combination as a whole, because everyone has different combinations. You might have JJ, but you might have Barlow. So we'll look at it separately and then hopefully give you enough information to still make your decision on. Happy with that, Mark?
Sure, mate. I think one of the depressing things, I was just looking at the break evens, and I've got 6 of the 15 highest break evens are in my team.
Not good signs, but it's two rounds. I'm trying to keep positive about this. Early days,
mate. It's very, very early days. And I've seen a few of my friends that are not necessarily great at Supercoach. They're doing quite well at the moment, which normally indicates that they'll drop off at some point and we'll come back.
And look, you never win your Supercoach off your starting team anyway. It takes 30 trades to get there. And fortunately for us, we have experience and a bit of know-how to use those 30 trades. So moving forward, this is where we get our edge. And for anyone out there disappointed in their start, keep your chin up, because anything can change in a week. So fingers crossed. Anyway, as per usual, just a reminder that we are an independent podcast. Mark and I do the show together from our own pockets. And so we've got a campaign on Patreon, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. And the link's always on our podcast page. You can support us there if you have a few dollars spare. Appreciate the show. Appreciate the advice. Maybe you picked a great team and are feeling really good and happy to donate a few dollars. Don't forget, you can jump on there. Even though preseason's ended, we're still taking, you know, donations for the rest of the year. So very much appreciate everyone who signed up so far. And if you're keen to get on board, please do.
Yep, that would be awesome, mate. It definitely helps us. Let's get into the show, mate. There's plenty to talk about.
Yep. First up, Mark, trade out targets. The first question is from Christian Bertaco or at Taco Bell Ski on Twitter. Is it more important to use correctional trades on rookies or premiums? So assuming you don't have any specific danger points or you're tossing up between two close selections, what are your thoughts to this question, Mark? Trade out rookies or premiums for correction trades?
I think getting the right rookies into your team has to be the number one priority, because that's what's going to set you up for the rest of the year. I think getting a read on premiums after just two rounds can be a little bit tricky, and you're more likely to make a bad decision trading a premium out than you are correcting rookies, I think.
At the end of the day, it comes down to the individual player. If you have got a standout poor pick, it doesn't really matter if they're a rookie or a premium. You just look to trade them out for the best value player that's available this week. And obviously, there's a whole bunch of them prior to the first price change of the season. The second question here is from at Cam Locke. Are we better off downgrading a premium for a rookie, or maybe side-swapping them to another premium or a mid-pricer that's performing really well? Do you have a preference in regards to this?
Personally, I think that taking a whole bunch of cash right now is not an ideal situation. Like, I know that we have done it in the past when we've traded out Ablett to a rookie mid-season when he's got injured or something. But I just don't see that you can get good value from swapping out premium for a rookie now and having $400,000 on the bench, because when are you going to be using that money? You're not going to be doing upgrades for like 3 or 4 weeks at the very earliest, which means that you've got a rookie on the field instead of a premium for that time. That's a lot of weeks. The difference could be 40 points a week. You start adding up to about 150, 200 points just from carrying that cash on the bench. So although you're making extra money for your team, you're going to have to make up a lot of points that you missed out on by having one premium less. And then that first trade that you make, you're actually bringing in the premium, but you're just going back to your starting amount of premiums rather than actually bringing in an extra premium. I did think about it. I have considered it. I can imagine that there would be scenarios where you'd think that it would work, but it'd have to be really, really particular for me to go ahead with it. I don't think it's a good idea to be carrying cash, that much cash earlier in the year. I think a mid-price to a rookie or a rookie to another rookie is a much better way to go.
I agree with that. Mid-price to rookie makes a lot more sense. If a mid-pricer is failing to perform, you can normally get a rookie, assuming you missed out on a decent one, you should normally get a rookie that can tend to match that or just trail a little bit behind, in which case carrying that cash isn't a huge deal. But otherwise, I tend to agree with you, Mark. A premium to rook, if you don't have a way of using that cash quickly, it tends to add up in points. Having said that, though, if you are looking to make potentially three correction trades, but you're only able to actually pull the trigger on two this week, I can definitely see making sort of a downgrade this week, or banking a little bit of cash this week to make an immediate trade next week. So using your third correction trade next week. So, you know, Rockliffe, he's confirmed out for a couple of weeks with his calf strain, for example. If you wanted to trade two other players out, and then maybe next week trade Rockliffe up to maybe five, for example, and use the cash that way. Or even if you have a player that's playing this week, you're not too crazy about, you want to give him an extra week to perform, for example, Michael Barlow, for example, Daniel Rich, you could give them an extra week, and next week, you know, use that money to upgrade them. If you can use the money next week, in other words, on an upgrade to complete a trio of correction trades, then I can see downgrading this week and banking some money.
You should also be very wary that making three correction trades at this time of the year is a pretty risky strategy, given how trades became so important at the end of last year and the year before. I think using three trades for corrections is probably overplaying it a little bit.
I tend to feel like trades are better saved in mid or late to mid season where people make last dash trades. I reckon most of the time those ones tend to be more limited in their effect, and some people burn trades that way, and we've tended to do that in the past. But to be honest, for me, correction trades or early season trades, I mean, you've got so many rounds for them to work out over. If you're quite confident on it, I'm more than happy making three correction trades. And we've had winners in the past make one or two correction trades in the first round, make another two correction trades this round, and still win the competition. So I'm probably sitting on the other side of the coin with that one. I think three correction trades is okay. Anyway, it's 2 points of view. Next question here is from Troy Rodney. Is it worth holding on to Barlow for form improvement? So getting down to some players now, and yeah, arguably Barlow's the guy we got the most questions about. Didn't actually do a tally, but I'm pretty sure it was him. What are your thoughts on him, mate? He's averaging 60.5 for the year so far.
Yeah, I've probably gone through a few stages in my thoughts on him, to be honest. After watching that second game, I was ready to just trade him out straight away because he really didn't look very good at all on the weekend against the Suns. He was slow. He was playing mainly up forward. Wasn't around the clearances very much. His disposal wasn't very good. So they're huge concerns. Like, that's age, form, and role all not looking great. But then a little bit of time to think, time to look into it a little bit more, and I've cooled on getting rid of him, I think, because he actually has a pretty poor record against the Dogs and the Suns in general, so maybe that stands out a little bit. If you look at someone like Mundy's only averaging 80 and he's at 610,000. I don't expect Mundy to average 80 for the rest of the year. I expect that to improve significantly. Freo have had two pretty bad losses, for them anyway. I don't expect Freo to keep losing. Like, I think that Barlow could really suck if Freo don't make the eight, but I'd still back them in pretty strongly to make the eight, win a lot of games at home this year. So for those sort of reasons, I think that he's a good chance to come good. If you look at the first four games that he played last year, I think three of them were below 70. So it's not that much different to then. My expectations have been tempered a little bit. I was hoping that he would go to a 105 to 110 average. I'm now thinking 100 average would be an awesome result. I can see why people would trade him. I really can see why people would trade him. I think that he's more likely to come good than not. So I'm probably just going to save the trade there and stick fat. What do you reckon, mate?
I've actually been leaning toward trading him out. I think I'm keen to make two correction trades this week, and I've got to decide who to trade out. And Toby Green's 60K less, and they both have, I think, similar-ish concerns over the midfield forward type split, over where their team will come in terms of breaking into the eight. I think most of us see them in, you know, the fifth to tenth, that sort of range. He's at 505,000. If he scores another 60, he's going to drop 50K, which is, that's bloody massive. I'm not sure I want to cop that, to be honest. So I'm actually leaning toward trading, Mark.
Like, if you had to put a percentage on it, what would be the chances of him scoring another 60, though?
It's hard to look forward with much positivity after 260s. I'm probably underrating his chances, but at this point, I'm like, you know, 50-50 whether he breaks this bloody 61 mark at this point. Who are they playing this week, Mark?
They got the Eagles at home, mate.
That does not fill me with confidence, mate. Not at all.
Last year, he didn't perform well against Eagles at home, but previous to that, he did have a really good record. I guess what I would be gambling on is Ross Lyon is in a position where his midfield setup has been failing. Barlow hasn't been part of that. Is Ross going to have to do something to change that up? And is Barlow part of the change? I guess I'd be gambling that he is. I can understand why people will say that he's not and they gamble the other way. But I don't think that Ross is going to all of a sudden go for youngsters in there, because that's just not what Ross has ever done. So he might be a bit up and down, but I'm going to back him in. And I don't like the sort of way that you're talking, in the sense of I want to make a correction trade, so therefore I just have to pick someone to trade out. I think that you don't just make a trade just because you can and you feel like you need to, sort of thing.
It's easy to say when you got bloody Hall sitting in your team, all right? He's looking like rolled gold at the moment.
I guess there's a couple of very specific situations here where I think Hall and Libba, I have both of those guys. I think that I would be very much looking to making a correction to bring those guys in.
Well, la-dee-da. Yeah, well, now you see where I'm coming from. But not everyone's picked all the must-haves. I'm certainly one of them. And so, you know, like I said, you have to choose somebody to trade out. And where his price point is sitting right now, if he drops, let's say, to 400,000, you could still bring him back in once he's, you know, showing a turnaround in form or something like that. It's not like he's ruled out for the season. It's just that if you feel like you need to pick up a different player right now, Libba is probably an even better player than Hall, because at least he has, you know, history of good scoring.
Yeah, I think you raise an interesting point there about when he drops to 400,000, if he shows good form again. Like, I think people overemphasize the first two rounds a little bit too much because this is when we can make our correction trades. But the first round only counts for one price movement, and the second round only counts for two. Whereas every other round that they play for the rest of the year until the very end count for three rounds. So they actually have the least effect on their price out of any round for the whole year. So if he brings out a 90 or 100 this week, he's not going to get down to 400,000.
Yep, that's definitely true. If he scores 60 the next 2 weeks, he's actually only going to drop to 416. So it's a good point there. Anyway, we'll move past Barlow because we've got lots of players to cover. Year of the Ma is asking about final defending words for Jordan Dugowie. So you've got Dugowie, Mark, and I'm guessing you've been a little bit disappointed so far. Thoughts on him? His break-evens, you know, because of his price point, it's only 57. So he could still very well go up in price this week.
Yeah, you would expect him to make that break-even. Round one, thought he was great. They were in a huge loss to Sydney and he scored 80-odd. Like, that's a really, really good result, round one. Round two, I think he just had a really off night. Like, his disposal was atrocious. He kept giving free kicks, 50-meter penalties away. He kicked a goal and made two really good tackles against Taylor Hunt. And that's all he did all night. It was just a really bad night for Dugowie. So I think it's hard to get too much of a read on that one night. I was expecting with Swan and Sidebottom out that he might get a bit more of a go in the middle, but he seemed to get about the same amount that he did round one. He's definitely potentially on the chopping block for me. I think mid-prices, unless they go nuts, they're good players to correct. Like, you can correct to other mid-prices. You can maybe find money and upgrade to a premium. You can downgrade him to a rookie. You've got a lot of flexibility with a mid-pricer. And so I think the signs are that he's probably not going to average above 90 now. Could happen, but it's probably more unlikely than likely. So I'm not going to give him a massive defense for you here of the Ma. Trade him out and then hope he doesn't go nuts, I guess.
At Seeker Supercoach has said in response to Year of the Mind, look to move Dugowie on, but his break-even isn't too bad and might actually make some money. Therefore, you can hold and deal with other issues. So back to talking about three correction trades before, he could be a guy that you hold for an extra week, maybe bank some cash, and you can always make an upgrade next week with extra cash. Or even hold him for three more weeks, and he can be your first upgrade target, and you can just hope that he scores well. The good part about him is that, you know, even though he's not scoring superbly, he shouldn't go down in price, so he seems a reasonable one to hold, and I can definitely understand holding him. If you have more problems on field, I would hold. If everything else you've nailed and you want a Papley type, I could see Dugowie to Papley being a good trade.
Yep.
Next question is from at M-Town Ballers. Rocky seems to have had the same injury all preseason. Should we just cut him and move on? Scored 48 on the weekend, did his calf, didn't come back for that last quarter. Wasn't playing particularly well throughout the game anyway. Has had a limited preseason, but we backed him and his scoring potential anyway. Out for 2 weeks now, Mark. Is that the final straw? Are you ready to cut his throat?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we had Ablett and Rockliffe both locked preseason just because of their ceilings and their price. I guess it's not overly surprising that one of them didn't work out. I think that Rockliffe really hasn't worked out. The fact that he's done another soft tissue injury, really now he's done a number of injuries over the last 12 months. It hasn't just been this preseason, because he was injured quite a bit last year on a few occasions. So to me, that just says it's time to move on from Rocky, maybe pick him up middle of the year if he can come back, show a bit of form.
That sounds dangerous, mate, after last year. I'm scared.
Because, yeah, I mean, he does have that huge, huge scoring potential, and Brisbane's draw does get a little bit better after about round eight, but I think that just given the fact that he's had these injuries in the preseason, and he obviously wasn't totally right coming into round one, you just want to give him that bit of that extra time to get his body right. I can understand why people would carry him, but I don't have any intention of doing that.
Yeah, I think if he wasn't missing this next 2 weeks, he'd have a little bit more confidence in saying, well, you can still turn this around. But to continue an interrupted start to the season only seems to compound the issues we already have with him. So, yeah, agree. At Jam Hawkins is asking, thoughts on holding Rocky this week for a 100K trade up to 5 next week? So, again, this triple correction trade idea, I'm obviously a thumbs up for this one. Mark?
If it's using three trades, I'm probably against that one. I think that you mentioned earlier that winners in the past have done that, and I think, sure, you can go super, super aggressive and gamble, and maybe that's what it takes to win, but I think the fact that a winner does it, sometimes that can make people go, oh, cool, now I can do it. And people get a bit excited about trading premiums as a result.
Well, let's say you wanted a JJ and the Hall type this week. That's going to leave you a little bit of cash next week. And Fife is about to drop potentially 40K because of his 60 start to the season. He's priced to average 20 more per round than he's managed. Is that still not tempting to you?
I think you've got to choose. My own philosophy on this game is that you have to choose. I've seen a lot of really good coaches do really, really well by making actually only one or two trades this week and going the other way. So there's a tendency for everyone to go 2-3. If you actually go the opposite to everyone else, then you can get an advantage by doing that. And I think that having faith in the research that you've done pre-season rather than jumping on players that have gone hot for 2 weeks is probably a smarter way to go. And so I think pick one out of Hall and JJ and still upgrade Rocky. I don't think that you have to make all three of those trades. You do have some control here.
Where were you last year when I traded Jamie McMillan to bloody Brody Smith after 2 weeks? That's good advice, Mark.
But you've got to remember, like, what did Brody Smith do last year? It was like 145 in round one and 130 in round two or something. Like, and then he was just awful for most of the rest of the year until really late. Like, and got injured and stuff. Like, that was a catastrophic fail.
Thanks, so, mate.
I think it's just, it's a word of caution to people going, oh my God, they've had two great rounds. They're going to do this for the rest of the year.
Last year, I was better off only doing one bloody correction trade because my team was fine. Yeah, I agree with that, mate.
And didn't McMillan come back and do pretty well as well?
Yeah, your average 85.
And I'm pretty sure the other correction, it's the Hall of Shame. We should probably mention it though. Last year, correcting Took Miller to Nathan Van Berlo. I think a lot of people did that.
I kept Miller, but you did that one. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, Miller scored 30 and 30 the first 2 weeks and then like ended up being worth like 400,000 and Van Berlo just went terrible. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just again showing how little read you're actually getting on someone from 2 weeks.
All right, mate. That's a good word of caution. I like that. It's pretty damn easy to get carried away.
Isn't Jared Waite averaging like 160 or something stupid? Like, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people that are going to bring Jared Waite into their teams this week.
Yeah.
And they're probably not going to be happy when he doesn't average 160 for the rest of the year.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the next question now. David Siddle's asking about Daniel Rich, Mark. Is he a guy that we should be keeping the faith with? Scored really well after the first round. And then this last round scored a 38. I mean, it at least relieved me a little bit to hear that he had hamstring tightness. He was mothballed for the last term. That explains it a little bit. But
I think he was on 12 at halftime, though.
Let's be honest. With Rockcliffe out of the team, Beams out of the team, number one tag is sitting straight on Rich's head. It's a little bit of a worry until these guys come back. Because picking him, you know, even in the back line, we were still reliant on the fact that the midfield depth at Brisbane is fairly decent.
There's not actually a lot of teams running taggers every week this year, though. So that
and Ben Jacobs was a late in as well.
And is one of the few taggers that runs a really, really strong negative game every week. So I think that he's going to be exposed to a bunch of teams in the next few weeks that don't actually run tags. Round one, he was like minus two, 20 minutes into the first quarter, and then just dominated the game. He was awesome. Yeah. Scored 100. And then, yeah, that was really, really terrible. And it's the lowest possession count he's ever had in a game. Like, what are the chances of having him in your team when he has his lowest ever?
When we pick him, apparently 100%.
and that's what is really tricky going into this week. We've got players like Rich doing so badly and Rocky doing so badly and Barlow doing so badly. And they can come together to make you think, oh my God, my team's so bad. I just need to trade my way out of this hole. But really, they're sort of like on the really far end of the scale and unlikely to all happen together. It's just bad luck. And you got to try and fight your way through that mental pattern. I don't know. Like, am I being too optimistic?
Look, with his price point, I think even with 38, he's still averaging 71 after 2 weeks because he had a fantastic first week. And his upside is so good. Like you said, I think he'll get tagged in way, way fewer games than he'll be able to run free this year. Eventually, you know, I mean, if you're holding him for the whole season, Beams and Rockcliffe, they will come back. And so it's sensible to keep Rich. I think he's shown enough in his first couple of weeks, especially considering he had hamstring tightness, to say he's worthwhile holding. Having said that, if you're really tempted by two potential trade-in targets this week, I could still see people pulling the trade. I mean, you know, it's a risk either way. Sure, it could backfire, but correction trades can sometimes set you up for the season as well. So we'll get on to some players that people are really tempted on in a few moments when we get to the trade-in targets, and then maybe we'll talk about Rich again. But, you know, otherwise, I agree with you. It's very marginal. At 436,000, you could very well work out still. All right. Next question is from Evan Winstanley from Twitter. Barlow, Rich, Rocky, we just talked about all these three players. You can only correct two. Which are they? And I've put this question in because we've had like five questions, specifically Barlow, Rich, Rocky. What the hell do we do with these guys? It's good to know you guys listen to our advice. I'm sorry it hasn't worked out brilliantly so far, but your thoughts, Mark, are you recommending trading two out? Where are you sitting on them? Would you sit on your hands?
Well, I know that you're recommending on trading all four of the three of them out. I'm only going to, at this stage, I could change my mind depending on selections, but at this stage, I'll probably only trade one of those guys out, which would be Rocky. If I had to pick the other one, my thoughts have been more inclined to trade Barlow out,
yep.
But it kind of depends on maybe who your target of bringing in is. Like, I know a lot of people are talking about a Barlow to Johannesson trade, but that would kind of screw with the setup in my back line. So I would be more comfortable maybe trading Rich to Johannesson instead. So I think it does depend on who your target is to bring in.
I would only trade two out if you're really, really wanting the trade-in targets, or maybe you wanted a Papley type, and then next week you'd look at upgrading to Fife. Again, I'm more open to the three correction trades. But having said that, in practicing discipline, I would probably recommend what you are recommending, Mark. If my team looked more solid than what I have, then yeah, I'd be more tempted to hold.
Yeah, your team is pretty crap.
Yeah, thanks, bud. Thanks. All right, Joshua Gibbs' question is next. Usually we advise not to trade out premiums, but it seems a lot of people are looking to move on underperforming premiums this year. Is this fraught with danger or opportunity to make some cash and upgrade again in a few weeks? So we've touched on it as we move throughout this, but I thought, you know, this is a key point this week and it's tied in nicely as a finishing point. So Mark, I'm guessing you think it's a potential danger point.
Obviously it's a potential danger. You do have to back your own judgment. And with Barlow, I am actually a little bit challenged on this because my instincts and watching the game says he sucks, get him out of my team. But then my rational mind thinking through the situation and thinking percentages of the chance of that continuing to happen are quite low. So my rational mind says, no, keep him. So look, I am tempted by this. I think that it can really, really backfire, but you can also get a huge advantage. It's a risk-taking game.
My thoughts about underperforming premiums are this is the right time to trade them out. So I'm more aggressive about it, but having said that, I'm more aggressive about downgrading them. I'm less aggressive about side swapping because a side swap last year bloody burnt me. Side swapping from a Rich type to if you end up with a Brody Smith from last year, you will be kicking yourself. Having said that though, if you're downgrading to a guy who is just undeniable value, he's priced at $200,000, $300,000 or $100,000 rookie, you can't really lose. They're bound to go up in price. Even if they score 260s, like Papley is still going to be one of the most accelerated rookies in terms of first two price rises. So I can see downgrading aggressively and then potentially needing to use that cash quickly in round three or round four. But having said that, I would not be aggressively side-swapping underperforming premiums. Sure, JJ and Hall have done well so far, but what if things turn around and you've spent one trade making negative points, which is what I did last year to the tune of 300 points?
Only 300?
Only. Only. All right. The last two guys in terms of trade outs, I just want to cover super, super quickly. Alistair Campbell is asking about Pendles. He looks injured. We know he's got, I think, slightly damaged ribs, or that's the rumor, at least, sore ribs. And as a result, he seems to play even more out of the back line. And we already knew he was going to spend, he said, up to 20%. It definitely feels like a little bit more after
a
last
lot
weekend.
More.
Yep. Thoughts on him, Mark? I'm assuming we're both sitting on keeping after our conversation so far.
Yeah, look, I am. He does look injured, but if it's around the ribs, he should recover from that and be okay. And he still scored. He scored, got 110 on the weekend. He did quite well.
Yeah.
I am regretting picking him.
Yeah, 100%. I am regretting picking him, but that does not mean it warrants a trade because trade's worth a whole bunch of points. And sometimes you keep suboptimal players as long as they're not terribly suboptimal. And he scored 110 with injured ribs. So fingers crossed, that's all we can do. Hope. So next question is from Felicity Heasley. She's asking about Wingard. Now, I've read that Wingard's actually going to make this week. He's a good chance to train on Wednesday and then play on Friday. But I know you've read, Mark, that there's a chance to miss.
Yeah, I think it was on Adelaide Radio this afternoon that Mark Bickley was saying that he has it on good authority that he won't be playing this weekend. So I think that if you put those two reports together, they suggest that he's not going to be out for a long time.
Yep.
So maybe it's a week or so, given the fact that we have forward rookies probably playing in your team at the moment. I think that he is a keep. Obviously, he didn't score well on the weekend, but he did get injured and he was in a terrible loss against Adelaide. Yep. And he scored really well the week before. Like, after round one, you would have been patting yourself on the back going, oh my God, I picked Chad. He's awesome. Like,
yep.
So the scoring potential's there. Port Adelaide's draw is still awesome. Mm-hmm. I would be keeping him.
Agree with that. 125 in week one means that even though he only scored 54, he's still averaging 89.5, which is only 5 points less than what he's priced at right now. So gun. Keep him. Moving on to the trade-ins now, Mark. We're going to start off with must-haves. Glenn McAuliffe is asking, is Ben Kennedy a must-have? He has all the other good rookies. I think that question is a very simple, hell yeah. Yes. He's averaging 110 definitely. After 2 weeks.
We copped a bit of flack on Twitter for recommending Ben Kennedy in the preseason.
Did we really?
Yeah, there was one or two people that thought that was a bit silly, but no, he very, very
threw
obvious.
Away the key, mate.
Yeah, and I was at the game on the weekend and he was one of their shining lights. He kicked a goal from 55 metres out when his disposal had been an issue for him in the past. Like, I think that definitely a good pick. Mature age, has the body, performed well in a loss. His position's well and truly secure with Melbourne. He's a bit more expensive, but seems like he could get some pretty good price rises.
Mm-hmm. Chuong or at Go for Chuong on Twitter has asked about Libba and Wells. They're surely must-haves.
Yes, I think Wells proved on the weekend 100%. I think even in round one he did, but like even in the preseason he was, you got to pick him, but now definitely got to pick him.
Vindication a little bit because I picked him in Supercoach draft last year. You know, I've always been a fan of Wells and I thought, man, maybe I pegged him wrong. It's great to see him firing because I love watching Wells on fire, watching him run over the top of the ground and could not be happier to have him at 240K.
He's probably a week away from a bad hamstring ruling him out for the rest of the year.
Positivity.
Given his history, but no, at that price, I mean, look, there's also a decent chance that in 20 weeks' time, he is still in our teams as a premium.
Yeah.
He has that scoring potential. So, yep, definitely a good pick. And Liver's the other one, averaging 116 after two rounds. That's probably a bit above what I expect him to do.
Yep.
But he looks like the Liver of old, and the Bulldogs look fantastic. So,
and there were serious doubts about Liver, whether or not the Bulldogs team have progressed and they aren't quite as reliant on him. But he's shown just how good he is as a contested beast. Even though he didn't get a massive amount of disposals on the weekend, his clearance numbers were such that he still scored 118. So very, very happy to see. And I'm glad that both of us kept the faith in him. And we were quite headstrong about that over the preseason. And that's one of the things that's worked out for us. So we hope the rest of you listen to him.
Just
not the rest.
Yeah, no, it was a funny weekend with Rich, Barlow and Rocky being three of the locks that I had in the first show, all just doing so badly. At least Libba did good and Ablett did good too.
Ablett. All right, Adam Whitfield's questions next. He has all playing rookies, but no Papley. Is it worth burning a trade to get him in? Jade Gresham is the guy that we have the most questions about. Jade Gresham to Tom Papley. Heap of questions about that, and I'm guessing for most people Gresham's been the poorest performer so far. So he's scored 44 and 37 playing as a small forward, but because he was a high draft pick, he's priced at 144. Would you consider a side swap like that?
I'd consider it. I'm probably unlikely to make it unless Gresham gets dropped. I think if Gresham gets dropped this week, that's probably a fairly easy move. I guess the issue for me is that Papley, surely he's got 200s in the first two games and he's not going to continue that. Like, it's way more likely that he doesn't continue it than he does. There was in an 80-point win and a 60-point win. Sydney are just not going to win by that much every week. They've got Giants, the Crows, then Eagles in the next 3 weeks. If he averages 70, which his average in the NAB Cup was 55, and you probably think that it was 69 points when they adjusted it to points per minute. If he scored 70 for the next 3 weeks, which I think is probably close to his upside, I don't really see him doing a lot more than that in the next 3 weeks. He goes to 250,000 and sort of starts slowing down with his money making. If that happened, then Gresham would only need to have made 100,000 to be keeping on par with him. Gresham might not make the money quite as quick. But just with the Tuke Miller example from last year in my mind, if Gresham was to keep his spot, maybe get a few more midfield minutes, get some experience, get one okay score in there, they might end up making about the same amount of money anyway. I know that two 100s from Papley in the first two rounds shits all over Gresham's first two scores, but I can imagine a lot of scenarios where you don't actually gain a heap from that trade. Look, if Gresham's not named this week, I will very highly likely make that decision, make that trade. But yeah, I just don't see that the upside's like guaranteed, like a lot of people probably think it is.
No, I agree it's not guaranteed, but I'll flip the coin on you. He scores another 100. The kid's going up to 220,000 in his first week. That's massive. Yeah. Massive. I'm probably a little bit gung-ho on him. I'm not sure I would trade rookie to rookie if the rookie's playing. So ultimately, my conservatism probably lands me in the same camp as you. Having said that, though, if there's an underperforming premium, I'd be tempted to pick up a Papley. And then you could look to trade him up quickly, even if he has a couple of 60s in a row, because his cash generation is going to be really, really quick. It still gives you a kickstarter to the season. It potentially puts you half a trade or a full trade ahead of everyone else, depending on what your downgrades are like. And so I could potentially see a spot with him. If I had DeGoey, for example, I'd be tempted into Papley.
Yep, and I can understand that temptation just because there's sort of guaranteed money-making, and a player like Menadue's looked pretty good, and you could sort of, like in my own situation, I could bring him onto the field, or a few of the other forward rookies are looking like scoring all right. I just think that in a month's time, do I think that I'm going to be looking back saying Papley was a must-have? I don't think that I am.
I'd agree with that. Chances are he'll start to tail off. And let's not forget, Papley's also a small forward, just like Gresham is.
Well, Papley is a genuine small forward, I think, whereas Gresham is a genuine ball-winning midfielder playing as a small forward in a team that's not very good.
You'd arguably prefer the small forward playing in a stronger team, even if he doesn't have the same ball-winning ability, though. Parrish is the guy we got a question about from at Fabregasto. A lot of people already have Oliver because he was locked ahead of Parrish and hasn't actually scored as well, 75 and 60, 75 in a win. He just sort of ran out of juice. But Parrish, Mark, 69 in the loss and then 97 in a win. And
kicked a ripping goal in the last quarter.
Yeah, and the kid looks genuinely talented, which we've all known, but seems to be thriving with the responsibility as well. Thoughts on him moving forward, though? Assuming Essendon still lose more games than they win.
Yep, and I guess it's the big losses that are going to be a question about how much he can actually score in those sort of games. Look, I don't think it's completely unreasonable to think that he might average around 80, which seems like it'd be pretty good. I took Parrish over Oliver at the start of the year. It's a late decision, and I guess I'm reasonably happy with it so far, but it's still pretty close. It's really borderline. Because of his price, it's really hard to bring him in. I'd probably recommend against it in most situations, but if he does average 80, he's going to get to a decent price, score a few points for you on field, and a lot better than the other mid-rookies. So it's very close, I think.
I didn't start with Oliver or Parrish. I ended up picking a Crouch instead because I'm not as confident on them on a medium-term basis. And even though he's shown a lot, and I would have possibly liked to have started with him ahead of Crouch considering both their starts, at this point, it'd be too much for me to trade to Parrish just because there's a good chance that they go up to 350K and are unable to get a strong game during upgrade season. Because really, that's what's key. And it's a little bit of luck does play into that. So Parrish could work out absolutely brilliantly. He only needs one big game to hit 400K at the right time. But if you don't have him, you're probably not willing to take that trade risk at this point.
Sure.
Andrew Bailey's question is next. After 2 weeks, what rookies do you consider must-haves? So we just said Parrish and Oliver, probably not must-haves. Who would you have as absolute must-haves? We've said Ben Kennedy is one of those.
Yeah, Kerridge, obviously, 100%. Everyone should have him. I've really liked the look of Menadue. I think I've been really impressed by what he's done in the games, which should keep his spot in the team. But he's more expensive. And I know that Brown had a down game, and McDonald, Tip and Waddy had a bad game in the first round one, but they both played really well on the weekend. I think Marcus most people Adams. Would... Marcus Adams would... Didn't even see him because he's my number one ranked defender.
Yeah, me too, mate. Me too.
I'm looking for rookies, not like the first slot in my defensive position.
Yeah,
I may have had him on the bench this week, which didn't work out so well.
It was the only thing that got me close, so thank God.
So I guess my score probably wasn't so bad if I had of... I just gambled and I didn't think I'd lose that badly. Adams is the number one, I think. I think that Mills is close to being must-have, just because I think he's going to be really, really regular and really consistent. I think he's a good one. I guess Davis playing for the Suns just because he's so cheap.
I currently would have Adams, Carriage, and Kennedy. I'm not sure if I would necessarily force a trade into anyone else. If you had a poor pick, sure. If you had a non-playing player, if you had a dude that's injured, if you have a guy who's not working out, scoring way below what you paid for him, sure. But otherwise, Marcus Adams, Carriage, and Kennedy would be the only ones that I'd actually force a trade into, I think.
Yep.
All right, next question is from Evan Winstanley. Is JJ a must-have in the backline while we crash back to earth? So he's arguably had too close to best on ground, and we probably dismissed him a little bit too readily, considering how smashing he started the season with. Having said that, he could still be a Brody Smith type. So where do you sit? Is he going to be a Brody Smith, or are you confident in his ability to carry on?
Well, I guess it's a Brody Smith or a Tom McDonald is what people are thinking of from last year. He's always had the potential, but his scoring just hasn't been there ever before. And then all of a sudden, two NAB games and the first two rounds, and he's just all over 100. So, look, the exposed form, you'd have to say, is a good chance of averaging 95 this year. I don't think like he's going to average 110 or anything crazy like that. The Doggies probably look a little bit better than what we expected. I know they only played the Saints on the weekend, but their back line, they're scoring a lot of points out of there, the rebound. I think he will come crashing back down to earth at some point, but probably still do well enough to maintain a pretty good average, which at his price would be a really good pick. I personally don't see him as a must-have. Probably not going to go like way out of my way to get him, but I can understand if the situation was just right that I'd be quite interested in bringing him in.
Agree with that. Not a must-have, but if the trade works out. At John Court 67's asking, Barlow to JJ via DPP. Thoughts on that, Mark?
Yeah, definitely something I think a lot of people will do. I would not counsel someone against doing that trade. Personally, for my own reasons, as we've probably outlined throughout the course of this podcast, I'm not going to be in a position to do that, or I don't feel like that's a good trade for me. But I can understand why people would make that trade. Just to me, it seems like you've seen Johannesson's two highest scores in a way and Barlow's two lowest scores. So it looks obvious now. But even if it still works out to be a good trade, they're both going to come at least a bit towards each other. So it's not going to be as good as it looks right now.
Mate, counselling a bit of sense into me, because I would have said a definite yes to that at the start of the episode, but I'm getting a little bit tentative, especially with all the Brody Smith talk and talk of my poor trades from round two last year. Yes, there's definitely a tendency to overestimate their potential based on 2 weeks of information, and I'm still leaning toward yes on that, but I'm moving closer and closer to where you're sitting, Mark. So
I think my position was I'm not going to do it, but I can understand why people would. Like, even I'm not that far from a yes there.
Okay, that's good to hear, because I'm definitely heavily considering that one. Feel like JJ and Hall are very, very tempting. Is Shaw to JJ a good trade this week? This one's from Paul Osborne. Considering the high likelihood of then having to pick Shaw up later on when his price is dropped, acknowledging that he still sees him in his top six defenders, and I think most people wouldn't have him dropping out even after a couple of slower starts to the season. So Shaw, he scored 87 and 74 in his first two rounds. If he keeps up and scores another 80, he's going to drop 50k to 556k next week. Mark, thoughts on trading out Shaw? And we have had actually a lot of questions asking about Shaw to JJ. Most of the people considering JJ are actually considering trading Shaw out for JJ.
Okay, I'm glad you explained that, because I would have been very dismissive of the question otherwise. I feel like Shaw might be a little bit like Danger last year, where you sort of, after a couple of weeks, you go like, oh, this pick isn't working out, I might just get rid of him, and then he just goes nuts. But I still have very much faith in Shaw that he'll come back. It was only a couple of weeks ago that he was a must-have, because he just showed such awesome form during the NAB. I'm sure that there's going to be times where he's going to do exactly the same again for the Giants, and that's not too far away. I know that you make $200,000 from the trade, but a lot of people probably aren't investing that $200,000 straight away. And I think if you're not doing that, then it's not worth it as much, because it's all about points for your team then. Realistically, like, how much are my premiums dropping? Unless they've got injured and they're going to drop like $200,000, I don't really care if my premiums are dropping. It just sucks because other people are going to get them cheaper. That's all. Like, my premiums can drop in price. I've paid for them as keepers.
Yeah. And let's be honest, how many people are trading around 3, 4, 5 anyway? Even if Shaw drops down, if there's a big game in round 4 or 5, he's going to be back up into a good price by the time he gets upgrade season. So it's very much too early to say. And look, we picked Shaw because we're like, hey, as a downside for a defender, 87, 74, that's pretty good. So if he then counterbalances that with a couple of 120s or 130, we'll be absolutely laughing. So I tend to agree with you there. Having said that, I can understand the temptation because there's some people who have a lot of faith in JJ after a couple of games, and being able to bank 200k for a fast upgrade, assuming you might be able to keep up a similar rate of scoring, if not the same rate of scoring, is particularly tempting. But it's still a high-risk maneuver in case things work out in the opposite way. JJ crashes and Shaw ends up continuing to be an absolute great defender. Having said that, though, I think JJ is a type of player I would consider if I had somebody like Sheridan or Lonergan. They did show good round one scores, but round two showed their downside a little bit. So Sheridan, 97, and then 55. And Jesse Lonergan, he scored 96 and then 67. They could still work out, but I could understand potentially doing a DeGoey to Papley and Lonergan up to JJ as an example. That's how I'd probably see JJ most likely coming in off a mid-pricer you're not too keen on.
What about Rich to JJ?
Rich to JJ, God, that's tempting. Could definitely see 10 points of potential difference there. But having said that, it could also backfire. So I would avoid that. But gee, mate, after 2 weeks, it's tempting. Where would you sit on that?
Yeah, I think that if you didn't have a lot else to correct, it's a big gamble to make that move, but I could definitely understand why people would do it. And I mean, it would be something that I would consider at some point, I guess.
All right, sounds like both of us got decisions still to make this week.
Johannesson has looked like really good. He's a flashy player. Of course, he's going to look good, but like his intercept marking and his kicking and his pace, he's really stood out.
Yeah. Let's not forget, they've got Easton Wood, who was All-Australian intercept marker last year. We've got Robert Murphy, who's been All-Australian body captain as a centre-half back before. So there's definitely competition for those points there, and JJ's smashing it at the moment. But there's potential risks in that as well if the Bulldogs start losing a few games and they've got competition for half-back points and intercept marks. There's definitely risk there.
It'll be very interesting to see what we're saying next week on the podcast, because they've got the Hawks this week, and I know it's at Etihad, which should advantage Johannesson, but yeah, like it could crash and burn in a week.
Yeah,
there's a potential there.
Yeah. The main thing for our listeners is that it's a fairly close decision, and a lot of it depends on the player you're actually trading out. At Jib Rangers is asking about Hall. Is he a must-in this week? So for the fools like me, I knew it was going to be painful because after round one, he was playing Essendon. But I didn't think they'd beat Freo and he'd score 124 2 weeks in a row. Mark, where would you sit on that?
Yeah, absolute must. But then, I mean, it's easy for me to say that because I thought it was a must preseason. Like, it really is easy to go, yes, I was right. Obviously, duh, bring him in. I could be right.
Good at rubbing it in, mate. Very good. look, I'm without him, and he's not been a must-in for me this week. I'm actually considering JJ instead of Hall this week because JJ plays in the back line, and his leeway for being a top six defender is arguably a little bit more than Hall, where there's more competition for top six midfield forwards.
That's really interesting you say that, because I was just thinking, I think Hall is way more likely to be a top six forward than JJ is to be a top six defender.
Western Bulldogs made the finals last year already. I'm more confident in their ability to continue backing it up against good sides, whereas Gold Coast beat Essendon, and then they had Freo, who've now lost 2 weeks in a row, and Freo a bit devoid on confidence. And look, seeing the game that Hall's played, it makes me think he is a must-have, but just practicing a little bit of skepticism, which is the same reason I didn't bring him in the first place. If you pick him at this price point, especially if you trade him in, he's staying in your team for the entire year. So that includes when Swallow gets back. That includes when they get more of their midfield core back. And
they're already almost there. It's O'Meara's at least 5 weeks away and Swallow's at least 10 weeks away. So that's quite a long time.
It's a long season, mate, and all I'm saying is there's more competition in the forward line. You've still got Montagna. Like, there's a lot of players that we didn't start with but could potentially still be good picks as the season wears on, depending on price fluctuations. You know, who knows? Buddy could still average 105. I just think in the back line, if you average 95+, you're pretty much a top six defender. In the forward line, it takes a little bit more consistency to do that. And look, it's a very marginal call and probably arbitrary comparing the two, but That's probably just where I sit at the moment. Having said that, it's easy for me to confirm my bias in the preseason as it is easy for you to confirm yours.
So, I just, like, from my perspective, I would say Hall is more likely to average 105 than Johannesson is to average 95. And I think that Johannesson doesn't have the scoring history of Hall. Like, I know it's only a small patch, but Hall does have the end of last year when he became a midfielder, where he went on a run of averaging over 100, whereas Johansson's never really shown a scoring potential before.
All right, so the last few players are a little bit more marginal. These are for the guys who are in the position of luxury trading because they don't have serious problems or serious plays that they've missed out on. So we'll cover them relatively quickly, but they're all worth mentioning. At Burnerfern is asking about Jack Martin. He's interested in your thoughts, Mark, because you did talk about him in the preseason. Your thoughts now?
Just said that so I could claim him if this happened, and it is happening. looks awesome. I still probably don't have confidence in him for Supercoach. If he was $50,000 cheaper, I'd very much be interested. But in the late 380, look, he could definitely do it, but I've just got too many doubts there.
Yep, it's off two wins, and they're not going to win all the games for the rest of
it. It would be fun to have in your team if he does work out.
Yep, and he's only in 2,500 teams. He's as unique as you can really ask for. All right, next question is from @Fabregas, though, asking about Zaki Merritt. So he's had a particularly strong start to the season. Even in your loss last week, 114, this week, 131 in your win. He's playing midfield time, not necessarily as much in the forward line. Thoughts on him, Mark? We did get quite a few questions about Zaki.
Sure. Now, I know a lot of people were considering him before the Essendon players got banned because he did have such a great year last year. And I guess what people thought was, oh no, he plays for Essendon, they're not going to get as many points. But what's actually ended up happening is because the players aren't there, he's got a full-time midfield role.
He's getting all their points.
So he's actually in a much better role. And someone from Essendon still does have to score points. I think the first tag now will go to Zaharakis. So I think that does open Zach Merritt up for a reasonably good year. Like, he might struggle in some of the big losses, but his disposal is awesome. He's a really good goal kicker. He was everywhere on the weekend, and he was genuinely playing midfield. So, look, I think he's a really good pick. I probably won't go too far out of my way to bring him in, but yeah, I think he's pretty solid. And I probably wouldn't trade Barlow to him, but just for the reasons that I've mentioned about Barlow.
Yeah, and we did get a lot of questions about him in the preseason, so there were a lot of people considering him, but I think ultimately a lot of people stayed away because of the whole Essendon thing. He's in under 7,000 teams, which makes him a very, very unique player as well. And although I agree with you, Mark, I wouldn't trade some of the players that we've talked about so far to him because it's very sidewaysy. Having said that, I would have preferred to start Zach Merritt over Barlow or Green at the moment. I have both of them in my team, so if you manage to start him, well done, because I think you'd be reasonably confident that he'd be able to keep up 100, hopefully, average for the season, if not at least 95. Next question is from Alex, and this is also an Essendon player, Zaharakis. He's asking about, and we've seen the potential of Zaka in the past, and he's kind of cashing in on that right now, taking the onus and responsibility on his head as one of the most senior players. And, you know, ever since Anzac Day, where he kicked that winning goal late in, we've been waiting for him to really play consistently out of the midfield, but he struggled with injury and stuff like that in the past. 132 in a loss, 133 in a win. The guy's racking up disposals like nobody's business. And, you know, similar to Zach Merritt, benefiting from not having, you know, the Heppel and Stanton and Watson taking midfield time away from him.
I think because, like, this is the first time he's been really, really fit for a long time, that even if those other guys were there, this was going to be the breakout year for Zaharakis. I know he's won a Best and Fairest before, but I guess my issue with him is that he's never really shown a really strong scoring potential before. I'm a bit worried about what happens when we play some difficult opposition. I really think that the tag's going to have to go to him because his meters gained is really big at the moment, and so teams are going to have to put some time into stopping him, and we don't really have much of a evidence batch of what's going to happen when someone does tag him. I'm also concerned about what his ceiling is because he plays for Essendon this year, so can he get above 110? Probably not. Given he's only 415,000, I don't think he's a terrible pick.
So last question here is from @OzToddy. Who do you think is the best replacement for Rockliffe if you're looking at expensive mids? Robbie Gray, Sam Mitchell, and Luke Parker, the guys that he's asked about. And I've put this question in because we've had lots of other questions from other people about all three of these plays. They tend to be the standout midfielders that people are looking at. So I'll go through them quickly. Sam Mitchell, we've seen in the past, do well. priced at 586, scored 130 and 144 so far this season. Robbie Gray, we've seen him break out and average 122 years in a row now this year as a sole midfielder, 126 and 129. And then the final one, Luke Parker, 538, coming off a injury-affected season last year, scored 161 in a dominant first display, and then 116 backing that up last week.
Personally, I think that I'd take Robbie Gray out of that bunch. And I'm a bit worried that he's going to spend a little bit more time forward, but he was their standout mid by a mile against the Crows, and I wouldn't be surprised if that keeps happening. Definitely has the potential to average 120 if he has a really big year. I don't think that I'd be taking Sam Mitchell. Like, I'm not sure where the improvement can really come. I know he's had two big weeks, but is he able to continue doing that every week? Maybe not. And my thoughts on the Sydney players, I think, are reasonably clear still. I haven't really changed my mind. Like, I know that Parker's done well the first 2 weeks and so has Tom Mitchell, but they've still got Hannabury, Parker, Mitchell, JPK running through that midfield. They can't all average 110.
Yep, I agree with that. I'm regretting not starting Gray. I had enough money to start Gray instead of Wines to start the season.
Whoa.
He's the one that I'd pick. But you know me, Mark. I've talked Wines up for a little while. I thought this was the year I'd put my money where my mouth is and I'd give him a little bit of a run.
Now, how's that working out?
He's not super so far, but Porter's really, really underperformed. I think if either of us saw the first round and the second round rolling out the way it has, I don't think we'd be really looking to bring in Port Adelaide players because of their sick first run. You know, the team's disappointed me more than Wines has. But having said that, Robbie Gray, absolutely superb. And I'd definitely be picking him out of the two and then agree with you. Parker, big score first round, but that can happen. And Canterbury and whoever can steal points off him in the next round. And Mitchell, too old, unfortunately. That's it, Mark. That's it for this week. It's been quite a long time.
To the end.
Yeah, that's it. We made it.
I feel like it was kind of good we didn't do much of a pre-show tonight, and I think we'll probably both help each other make some decisions.
Hopefully, you've helped me make some sensible decisions, and it's not that I'm not being ballsy enough by the end of the season, because I'd hate to learn that lesson on the flip side. Big decisions still to be made for the both of us, it sounds like, finalizing these marginal calls. Best of luck to our community out there. Thank you so much for your support. And there's a heap of you getting involved in asking questions on social media. Our forum's absolutely humming. So, and of course, the support on Patreon so far has been great. So we had a week off last week, so apologies for that. But just want another massive shout out. I really appreciate the community and how it's developing and your participation so far. Please keep it up. Please keep messaging us. Get on our forums. Get involved. We really appreciate that.
And good luck. This is when the fun begins.
Yep. Get to trade. Pew pew. All right, mate. We'll catch you again next week. All the best. See ya.
See ya.